Willkommen bei Marketer Talk, dem Podcast der Marketingbörse. Hier erwarten euch spannende Gesprächsrunden und Interviews mit Experten aus der Marketingszene. We are in Berlin at the Signal, and I'm talking to Chris Köhler. He's CMO at Twilio. Chris, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first, what is your job and how do you use AI in marketing?
How much time do we have, actually? So I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Twilio. I joined a couple years ago. We're doing a lot of stuff around AI. I mean, it's both an exciting and pretty transformational time across the organization. But I can give you a few examples. So the first where we started, we had a problem where we said, hey, we have lots of customers reaching out to us, wanting information, feedback, product info, pricing info, all of that. And we didn't have enough people in the organization to respond back to every one of them. So naturally, as marketing team, what do? You prioritize and you say, okay, well, here are the high intent potential customers. Let's reach back out to them. And the rest of them, we'll put them in the dreaded nurture campaign where they get emails to never respond and never engage with us again. So we said, well, what if we rethink this? What if we reimagine what that process? And so we created ISA, an agent and right now it's all done via email. So someone emails in, we have ISA, an agent that we've trained on all of our content, our data, our brand, our voice. And ISA has a conversation back and forth with the customer or prospect, answering any questions they have. In some cases, it might be a support question. It could be a pricing issue. It could be a product question. It could be an implementation question. But we've moved away from this notion of having to decide which customers to reach out to and which not. We can reach out to all of them and we can do it quickly because, again, ISA is an AI agent that works 24/7. So that's one great example.
Keep with ISA. Does she have a memory?
She does. So again, we're using a lot of our own capabilities, our own products. We've built it on, our infrastructure plus leveraging LLM models as part of that. But there's memory built in. And then what's nice is when we have that conversation and say, Issa's like, okay, I'm ready to buy or I want to talk to a sales rep. We then take that data, all that transcript, and we hand that off to the sales rep. And the salesperson's like, oh, I know exactly what you're interested in, the conversations you've had. And it makes a much, much better process because the customer doesn't have to repeat themselves of all the stuff that they've had back and forth with ISA.
Does ISA feel emotion? I mean, in the way that I'm the kind of customer who hates emails from ISA. The other one, he loves it to be cared about by ISA. So there are huge differences in how customers react to emails.
Yes, we actually have this notion of sentiment analysis built in. So if you're sensing that the customer is frustrated with this interaction, you can immediately, ISA will send an email to our team saying, hey, we need to have someone reach out to this person personally right away. If someone has a positive sentiment and the back and forth is like, great, let's keep it in this channel and go forward. So again, not every customer is the same. They want different experiences, and that's what we're trying to provide.
Honestly, email is nice to have everything documented, but in some cases, I just want to have answers. Does ISA also talk to me? I mean, can I just phone her?
This one is all built. ISA specifically was built for email. We are now building out other agents that are voice, but the same concept. So how do we take all the information we know, load it into the AI agents? We do this from a support perspective as well. And that conversation's tracked. The memories, logged as part of that. So one of the most frustrating things we see, especially in the voice channel, is I've got a history with you as a company, a brand, and I've had all these interactions. Every time I call in, make me feel like you don't know anything about me. And it's a huge problem. And so I have to repeat all the same stuff over and over again. One of the things that we announced at Signal San Francisco, and what we're announcing and talked about today, was this notion of customer memory. So close to the channels, every conversation, whether that's in text or email or voice, is logged, it's stored, and so that you can now use that memory for the next conversation you have with that customer. It just creates a much better customer experience.
Chris, silly question. How do you like the software you're working with? How's Twilio working from the customer, from your perspective as a customer of Twilio?
I'm like the hardest customer probably, you know.
I believe you are.
We have a program we call Customer Zero. And so Customer Zero is we have to go deploy and use our own technology. We do this a lot on the data side with our CDP products around that as well. So we have a full program. I'm the customer. My team's the customer. We do just like any other customer. We do reviews. We give feedback. But again, we're using it and we're giving the feedback before we release that into the, you know, into the market. So that if we can use it, we think our customers can use it as well. So it's great. It's fun to be, you know, the customer. The product and Inge team may not love it, but, you know, we're tough.
Do you use vibe coding? I never ask anybody of the other ones. Do you use vibe coding also, or do you offer it?
We have a bunch of platforms that you know we offer the marketing team. I'd say we're probably using more Claude Code now. We use that as a company, and we've just built an integration with our MCP server as part of that. So I would say it's probably more on the Claude Code side than maybe some of the other traditional vibe coding applications, but we have in the past, and we've done lots of prototyping in whether it's Replit or Lovable, right? So a lot of these different vibe coding applications, but when we get into production, it's probably more Claude Code.
You as a user of Twilio, of course, you have questions, and how is the support of Twilio for the customers who are using a software product and who have questions? I mean, the whole support management.
I think, as we're releasing these new products, we're rebuilding and rethinking our whole customer support experience as well, right? We know, just like every other company, that they've been in silos, and we see this quite a bit, and we've heard it from our customers today. They're on stage. Where we're trying to basically for our own customers change that experience gap. If we have a conversation across one channel, we want to reflect that in the next channel. We want to predict why they're calling, the data that we have, and create a better experience. We're not perfect. We get that. But again, we're evolving and leveraging our own tech to do that.
The product people within and marketing, I mean, you're marketing, they could use the customer interaction data, the support data, to enhance the product. So for product development, what role does it play, the knowledge you collect about customer interactions yourself?
Yeah, we do. Well, one, yes, we've got a deep history of like what is happening, how they're using our products as part of that. But we have a process that we call it our interlock, where we basically take a lot of that product data and we work with the product and engineering team saying, here are the signals we're hearing from a market. The product team has a lot of signals within the product and the usage. We've got all the customer experience data of when they're calling in, what are they calling about, what are the key challenges. Plus, we've got our sales team where they're having conversations with customers. We're logging all of that. And then we're taking that, we've got a meeting and we're prioritizing, saying, here's all the feedback, the signals across the organization. This is what we've got to go do to improve our product. So yeah, we're working through that piece.
You just mentioned the salespeople, and the sales enhancement can, AI can do a lot of things in that respect. So how are the salespeople using AI to enhance their work?
Yeah, I mean, I think the same thing. The more signals you have about a customer or a potential customer, we're using lots of data, as you can imagine, for opportunities to say, okay, today, how do we create what's the next best offer for our own customers? What's the next best upsell component? When are they? One of the things we've done a really nice job in our what we describe as our self-service channel. So someone comes on to Twilio.com, they start using our APIs, they build out, you know, some applications. Gindex was like a perfect example, which we talked about today just on stage. And at what point then do we use data and intelligence to say, okay, they built this out, it's probably now a good time for sales to reach out because they hit a certain threshold. They've hit a certain threshold, or they're starting to use multiple products. Let's go engage and help them and really try to figure out what they're doing. So that would be one. Another is you can imagine all the signals that we see across our organization, our website, third-party data. We're taking all of that, partnering with the sales organization to build, I would describe it as sort of ABM, what has been account-based marketing, which today is usually done at a fairly small scale. Now with AI, you can do that at scale. So imagine a world where every one of our customers or prospects, could we have enough data to create a personalized, you know, experience for them?
What role are personal visits of your salespeople at the customer's base, at the building of the customer, what role does it play these days? Or is it everything with online conferences?
Part of why we're doing this event here in Berlin, and we've got a world tour where we're going to 8 cities and post our San Francisco event, is in-person interactions matter a lot. And, you know, we found that it's important to build those relationships with customers, but it's been harder. You know, I think what's been interesting post-COVID is a lot of organizations, one, they're not going into the office every day. So pre-COVID, you could work with a customer. They're always in the office. It's like, pick a day, we'll come into your office and work through that. Now they're much more distributed, or they're only in the office certain days, or they're fully remote. And so that it becomes more challenging to get face-to-face with customers. So from a marketing perspective, one of the things that I'm doing is trying to provide lots of experiences for our customers to be able to engage with us, whether that's dinners, small scale events, events like this here at Signal Berlin, to build that relationship. Because if we can't get to their office and sit down with them, well, maybe they'll come to us and we'll build the relationship that way.
Do you use this conference also for private discussions with customers? So all the salespeople are here?
Not,
and they have the chance to talk to the customers?
Yeah, we've done quite a few customer meetings, this morning before the event started. So salespeople and many of us, you know, just trying to get an understanding of how things are going, what we could be doing better. So we use that as an opportunity to start to build that relationship. We had a nice dinner last night with about 25 customers, and, you know, you get a chance to engage with them, ask them, build that relationship too. So yeah, we think there's a really, really important face-to-face personal relationship building that is definitely necessary in sales.
Do you use large conferences or fairs for side events, where you organize side events and invite your customers?
We do. We're trying to, you know, I think this is always the balance of, there's so many events, which ones make sense? But yeah, we're always looking for opportunities to connect where our customer is going. And if we can get there and be there and connect with them, that's definitely part of the strategy.
From your budget, these conferences, they're not cheap, the road shows that you do. So most of your budget for events you spend on your own events. How much do you spend on fairs and on other events from organizers?
It's a good question. We probably spend half of it on maybe 60% on our own events and probably 40% on third-party events.
Because so still a lot,
because again, especially when we've got large scale partners where, you know, they've got thousands upon thousands of developers or execs there. We're there sponsoring. So we do it with some of our partners. We do it at industry events. We're still spending a decent amount on getting access to those customers based on where they go.
What's the role of the third-party events? What's the role of your own road shows apart from having personal contact?
Yeah, this is a hotly debated, how do you justify and do the ROI of all of these different event types? Each one is slightly different depending on the audience. And so there's examples where, like, Mobile World Congress is a big one in Barcelona. We see that as a brand building industry. We have to be there. Will we get sort of sales and pipeline out of that? Probably. But at the end of the day, it's like, we have to show up, we've got a brand, we've got to be there. So it's almost exposure, in my mind, is like, that would be an example where we need to drive exposure, part of that. For our own events, it tends to be mostly customers that attend. And the idea there is, how do we get our customers excited about our future and our vision of where we're going? And in order to justify, you know, the expense of doing these, you have to see, okay, are there new opportunities that are created where the customer was like, I didn't realize you guys did that, or that's a really new cool product. I want to go have a conversation. So you might get new pipeline created and new opportunities on that front. Or it might be a customer that has been engaged in a conversation and they're saying, hey, I want to go bigger with Twilio. They come here, they meet us, they spend time, they understand the personal dynamics, and they say, okay, I'm ready now to move forward as part of that. So in that case, we justify a lot of it is building the community, building our customers, but there should be some growth opportunity that comes out of this for sure.
What about prospects? Probably you also have prospects here today. And you have, of course, a lot of prospects on these third-party events. What is more important from the perspective of getting new contacts to companies which are not yet your customers?
I think if they're coming to our event, my sense is they're a little bit further. They've got some awareness of the problems that we solve. And in that case, we need to, one, we introduce them to a lot of our other existing customers. And so that's one of the things that we feel, you know, is part of the strategy is we've got happy customers. We should have them talk to our prospects and let them have conversations, you know, without us being involved. That's the best way. When our customers sell for us, the best example. In the notion of a third-party event where they may or may not know Twilio, for us, it's just like building the database, trying to figure out, have some association, and start to build a relationship over time, and maybe that there'll be an opportunity down the road.
You said third party or big fairs, for example, like Barcelona, it's for branding, of course. And in that case, as a brand, you have a huge stand, which is horribly expensive as a big brand. How do you think about that? I mean, the fairs live upon that. It's a kind of blackmailing. How do you think about that?
I think we have to be very selective as we think about which ones are the ones that we're going to participate. I mean, yes, I could spend all of my budget being at every large scale event and have a massive stand as part of that. Where we take a look at and we evaluate each one of these and we say, does it have the right target audience? Does it have the right segments of customers we want? Is the geographic or the use cases there we can work through? And then we'll say, okay, this is one that we think we're going to invest in. And we know there are more that we turn down all the time where we just say, okay, we just can't afford to do that. So I think very selective. So we don't do this everywhere, but it's more selective.
Is there a question I didn't ask and you want to say something about it? I mean, I'm very curious. I know
there's I could
ask for hours.
Yeah, I could answer for hours. You know, it's such an interesting time. I think the question that I'm getting asked more and more in more conversations I'm seeing with CMOs is, what does the future org look like for marketing? And one, we don't know yet, but I think there's a world where I don't know that marketing necessarily will decrease in people and headcount. There's a general belief is, hey, we can roll out AI and you need less marketing people. I don't think that's the case. I think we have more work to do than we have people to do. But I think the type of work's going to change. And I think we're going to get into a world where you're going to have more people facilitating and orchestrating AI as a new function and a new role. Versus today, everyone has a very thin slice of the work, the production that happens. So I think we're getting into a world where we're going to have more generalists wielding AI to do broad-based capabilities across marketing and less specialists, but it doesn't mean they go away, but that are the experts around branding and messaging and pricing and those aspects. So I think the way that the structure and the skill set of those companies that have marketing functions, I think that's the piece that's pretty interesting over the next couple of years.
Do you already have people within your company who are not people, but who are agents, and they are available for the marketing team? So if I have a question for search engine or geo, not SEO, but for geo, I don't ask my colleague, I ask the the agent?
Yeah, I mean, we have access to, you know, multiple LLM models. We have our own agents, you know, based on what's our proprietary information that we want to go at. So that happens across the company. It could be HR, finance, or marketing as we're working through that. So that's one aspect. And then there's a lot of work going around GEO of, okay, how do we get in a world? The way I often describe this is Google had a monopoly on search for many, many, many years. And as marketers, it was relatively predictive where I could say, okay, here's the set of topics. I've got to do SEO around this. Depending on where I rank, I kind of know based on, you know, the optimization. And if I really wanted to get in front of these keywords or whatever, I'd pay money to get to the top. That was fairly predictable. Now in this new world, that's changed because every time you ask a question, because it's probabilistic in the LLM models, you're going to get a different answer. And the source of truth for all of these different models is not like there's a single provider that everyone goes to Claude, right? Or they only go to OpenAI or they only go to Gemini. No, they're using all of them. So the job of marketers has gotten much harder because we have to go optimize across lots more surfaces. But then each one of those models uses a different source of truth that we have to create content and technical requirements to capture all of that. So it's exciting, but it's also, it's pretty exhausting.
And all this knowledge, it's now within your GEO specialist within Twilio. And does he or she have an agent at her side which collects all this information? Because when she leaves the company, all this knowledge, Twilio specific knowledge about your website, about your strategy, how you go to these GEOs and to the zero click searches, how you behave to this, and so is all this knowledge preserved in your own LLM or your own agent?
The answer is yes, but I think to clarify, one of my sort of aha moments around GEO is my initial thought was, okay, take the person that does SEO optimization and now put them in GEO. Well, that was the first take. And then I realized, actually, it's not a person.
It's not.
The whole marketing org needs to be thinking about how does GEO, because like I described before, it's much more complex. So I think that's the piece of one piece of advice. If the marketers are out there thinking, oh, well, I'll just put my SEO person on GEO. No, like it is not enough. You will fall behind. You need everyone that creates content in the organization to think about how do I write for humans and optimize for agents. And so that's our guiding principle internally. And so everyone in marketing has a responsibility for GEO.
Okay. Anything else we didn't discuss?
No, this was fun. I mean, we could talk for hours.
Thank you, Chris, that you took the time to explain the challenges of a CMO at Twilio. Thank
awesome.
You.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Das war's auch schon mit der heutigen Episode. Wir hoffen natürlich, dass sie euch gefallen hat und würden uns sehr gerne über eine Bewertung freuen. Wenn ihr keine Folgen verpassen wollt, abonniert gerne den Marketer Talk der Marketingbörse. In diesem Sinne, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.